2021.
Wow. We are Steph and Carrie and My Bloody Whorecast. It's been so long.
Well, technically, though, this is season 5. We just barely did a season 4.
This is season 5. We barely did season 4. And if you hear in the background, that's my dog, Maya. She's likely going to do this throughout the podcast because that's just what she does.
That's okay. I appreciate having Maya here.
So here we are, season 5, Steph. Is that right?
It is. And we're going to kick things off with our annual horror Oscars.
If there's anyone still listening to us, we're glad you're here.
I feel like it might be Klon and Carrie's sister.
I think that's about right. But, you know, this is actually, I think for both of us, this usually is one of our favorite episodes of the year.
Oh, absolutely. It's a tradition that I look forward to. But before we get into that, Carrie, do you want to talk about some movies you've been watching?
Well, you know, I've been so caught up with, you know, with 2020 horror and kind of looking forward to 2021 horror that I've been sort of, you know, just kind of narrow-minded in that way. But, you know, I watched a lot of stuff this past year. We talked about that a little bit. And we did an episode, of course, in 2020. We did a couple. You know, I haven't seen a whole lot of, you know, quote-unquote classic horror stuff, though I did recently purchase the Shout Factory version of Candyman and rewatched that. I hadn't watched Candyman. It came out in 92. Bernard Rose, of course, who I also directed the really cool Paper House, which very few people have ever seen Paper House.
It's been on my watch list for forever. I've never seen it.
Super dreamy, weird, you know, kind of British horror. But I rewatched Candyman and I'll be damned, it is still just as great.
I also think Candyman is great. I actually think a lot of 90s like hit horrors like that sort of get trashed now. And I'm just like, Candyman's fucking awesome. And Tony Todd as the character Candyman is like super awesome. It kills me that this woman has to choose between like her totally lame, terrible, I don't know if it's her boyfriend or her husband, and Candyman. Candyman's romantic as hell.
He's way better. Unfortunately, he also has a, you know, centuries-old bloodlust, and there's, you know...
Details!
Right, true. No, you know, and what's cool is hearing Tony Todd on some of the extras, there's an interview with Tony talking about the movie and his reverence for it and how serious he took it, and it really adds to just the film as a whole. Because Tony Todd, that is kind of his calling card as an actor. I mean, he has 226 film credits or something like that.
Oh, shit.
But Candyman is the one where he got to be the lead. I think that was his movie. And he crushed it. He crushed it. So, also, I rewatched it because I'm very excited about the forthcoming Candyman produced by Jordan Peele.
I'm also excited.
And I can't wait for that. Because I think they're going to expand. You know, Candyman has this great mythology that I think they're going to expand on a lot in the remake.
Yeah, well, that shadow puppet style promo for it was just incredibly haunting and awesome and not what I expected to promote it.
Right. Another weird one I saw recently that, again, it's not on my list for our horror Oscars, but I thought it was interesting. It's not really a true horror movie. I'm thinking of Ending Things, the Charlie Kaufman.
I also watched it. I would just call that like a long drawn out depression movie.
Sure. It's interesting. I also read a lot about it and I realized that I may need to read the book because they cut out some major plot points from the book. I went a little too deep on it, but I'm glad I did because there's some things that actually would make the movie parts that would add to it and make a little more sense from the book. But I thought it was interesting. And I think Jesse Plemons is great. He's a straight, he plays all these strange roles by all accounts, just super normal guy, but I thought he was great in the film.
I thought both leads in Thinking of Ending Things,
she's great as well.
Knocked it. And Toni Collette, queen of the awkward dinner scenes between that and Hereditary.
Oh yeah. I mean, Toni Collette's all become like sort of a horror icon recently, I feel like, in the last few years.
I guess my beef with Charlie Kaufman movies in general is like, there's just this pretentiousness that's like really hard for me to always get behind, but
sure.
I still thought this movie was great. It filled me with hopelessness in the most effective way possible.
Oh yeah, there's no way out in this one. Jesse Buckley, sorry, is the other lead along with Jesse Plemons. So you got two Jessies.
Jesse.
The Jessies. They should form a band. And David Thewlis, yes, is Toni Collette's husband.
Oh, yeah, he rules.
And he's great. Again, super weird, bizarre. He pulls it off very well. So those are a couple. What about you? What are a couple of notable ones?
Well, I'm trying to think of things like you. It's a lot of 2020 releases, but yes. I want to touch upon some that just didn't make my list.
Okay.
So I thought the movie Host was great. Did you watch that one?
Mm-mm.
Host is our first, like, pure pandemic movie. It's we've seen it before, shot like a Zoom call. You might think of something like Unfriended, but it's so unique the way they do it. It genuinely frightened me, and it's like a lean, short movie. It's a little under an hour.
Wow.
Yes.
You wouldn't even get a theatrical release at that. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, so I went in expecting, like, an Unfriended or The Den, but it's much better than both. There's no filler. It's excellent.
All killer, no filler.
Yeah, right. And then over Christmas, I decided to watch every single Silent Night, Deadly Night, as I had not seen them.
I've only seen the first one.
Well, okay, you don't need to watch the second. It's a rehash of the first, but you do need to watch Silent Night, Deadly Night 4, Initiation.
Ooh.
It has nothing to do with the original storyline, but let me just tell you, it's directed by Brian Usna, who did Society.
Oh, yeah, and he produced, he won the producers on Reanimator, a lot of the,
rules, and he's like a big effects guy, isn't he?
Yes. Yeah, he did. Yeah, he and Stuart Gordon worked on a lot of those films. I think they also were involved with Return of the Living Dead 3, I believe. I know Yuzna had a part in that. Yeah, no, he's great. I think he wrote Beyond Reanimator as well.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, he's kind of an underrated horror mind.
Well, then I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that Silent Night, Deadly Night 4 is easily the best in the franchise. There are faces in the walls. There are just those gooey Usna effects. And
oh, wait. Is it Clint Howard in that one?
Yes. It's replaced by witches. Clint Howard has a dick on his nose. Like, it's the only rape scene that is so bizarre, I wasn't upset by it. I'm just like, this is more like Cuckoo Bananas than it is traumatizing.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, and the last movies which I've really enjoyed was I got into the Jorge Torres revision movies. So I watched Friday the 13th, which mashes together the entire franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just nuts that he's made those movies into one seamless, like, epic, batshit insane anti-hero kill movie. Like, it's nonstop, and it makes Jason Voorhees very sympathetic, with, like, a sympathetic score.
Love it. I still haven't seen any of his revision films. We talked about this recently, where here in Athens, at one of our favorite establishments that's both a bar and a cinema as well,
yeah,
that they played the Phantasm revision, and unfortunately, I missed that one.
Yeah, so I also watched the Phantasm revision. I've still never seen any of the sequels, and I know you love Phantasm 2.
Phantasm 1 and 2 are those two, even though I don't think the 3 and 4, 3 is actually a lot of fun. 4 is really just a rehash of the first three, and it's not necessary to watch. But those first two Phantasm, absolutely love.
Yeah, well, I now want to watch them after watching this insane revision. And then the last one I did was, or the first one, actually, that I watched was the Death Wish revision.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait, no, I've got two. So the Death Wish revision for sure. And that mashes together 250 films and somehow creates, like, this really good narrative where Charles Bronson's vigilante character is kind of like Patrick Bateman, American Psycho.
Ooh.
But it's also, like, absurd and ridiculous. There are clips from, like, Sister Act, Friday the 13th, like, just sewn in there.
So if that doesn't grab y'all, you need to go find those.
And the Evil Dead one was just incredible. I really think, like, stripping the color away and, like, taking out a ton of the dialogue. Yeah, that was awesome, too. I think you would love that.
I can't wait. I have to say one more that I did see over in 2020. Late November, I watched this one. It's one of the regional horror films, The Slayer.
What is that?
We posted it on our Instagram, and I don't know how detailed you looked into that. It's not good, but it is a lot of fun, and it's basically a woman and her husband and their two of their friends, these two couples, go down to St. Simon's to go on vacation, and there's a weird creature and supernatural things happening, but it was filmed in Georgia, so it is one of our own regional horror films.
Yeah.
And it was considered a video nasty. Now you look back and you're like, really? Because it's really, I mean, there's four kills in the entire film. The rest of it is painstakingly, like, syrup molasses slow. But the four kills are pretty good. But it's just funny that it ever was considered a video nasty. Not a great film, but if you're just, if you're one of those video nasty completists and you haven't seen The Slayer,
put that on my resume.
You should take a look, right? You should take a look at that one. It has some fun moments, I will say that.
It's called The Slayer?
The Slayer.
I'm all about that. I also want to see more horror movies set in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Are we ready to get to the main event?
Bum, bum, bum. The My Bloody Horror Cast. Horror Oscars 2020.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to tell me what you picked for best visual effects?
So best visual effects. So this is one of those ones where I had multiple options, and whereas I would love to pick the one that was not the biggest budget option, I can't help but do that because the effects are so cutting edge and fantastic, and I get it. They had a leg up on the competition. It's a big budget movie, but The Invisible Man, Jonathan Dearing and Dan Oliver, the visual effects for the invisible scenes blew me away. I thought it was incredibly impressive, partly because you truly don't see it. they're in a way, I think the effects are very underrated because it's not a creature that you're seeing. It's the absence of a creature.
Are they the same team that worked with Lee Winnell on Upgrade and stuff? Because it looks like a similar style.
I believe they are. By the way, which I thought Upgrade was fantastic.
Oh, same.
It's great. And if you haven't seen Upgrade, it's just it's a little genre exercise, a little sci-fi, sci-fi action. It's fantastic. So The Invisible Man, I mean, the scenes, the quote-unquote invisible scenes are just stunning. I would like to just mention a runner-up. If that's all right?
Yeah, I'm doing the same thing.
So, I have a co-runner. I know this is a cop-out. I have a co-runner-up. The Wretched and Sputnik. The creature...
Oh, God damn it! I wanted to watch Sputnik and I didn't get to it.
The witch creature in The Wretched is awesome. Old school, practical effects, great. And the creature in Sputnik is likewise awesome. It looks great. It's fantastic. So, both those movies had The Invisible Man not been released in 2020, I think it would have been a tie between The Wretched and Sputnik for my best VFX.
Right on. Okay. As per usual, Carrie has researched the creative teams involved in these projects. I haven't. I'm just going to say, for best visual effects, I'm awarding the movie Butt Boy by Tyler Kornack, who directs and stars in it. And I'm just going to say, I had not envisioned a world that is inside a man's asshole.
Mm-mm.
And
I don't think anyone but him had.
And the end of the movie. So, yeah, being inside this guy's butt and the end of the movie are effects I wasn't expecting to experience. And now that I have, I got to say, I'm not going to see anything like that. It totally blew my mind. It's absurd and actually very effectively menacing. I do think it's a horror movie.
Okay.
So, yeah, I went with Butt Boy. But my runner-up, which is Newcastle Freak. I actually really enjoyed Newcastle Freak. I know why others didn't. And I don't hate on remakes. This is a difference between Carrie and I. Carrie's very critical of them. And I'm...
Now. But one thing I will say, I thought the Invisible Man remake put out this year was excellent.
Oh, so
sometimes,
hell yeah.
Sometimes a few will go... But you're correct. Overall, you are correct.
So I'm not saying this Castle Freak even holds a candle to is it 1990 Castle Freak?
95, I believe.
Oh,
I think
shit.
It was, I think
okay.
It was actually 95. Yeah.
But the effects, the freak is so good. I had a great time.
That's awesome.
All right. Let's move on to best score.
Best score. Would you like to start this one off?
Okay. Well, to be honest, I just needed any excuse to fit bad hair on my list of Oscar winners.
That's fair.
So I'm going with that. It's the movie that's about a killer weave set in the 90s, kind of a pseudo MTV. It's truly one of the best movies I watched last year. Mm. I can't think of many soundtracks that stood out to me, but Kelly Rowland in Bad Hair plays this pop star who is clearly a Janet Jackson type, and she has this song called I Get It. And that song is so much better than it has a right to be. It is so good. I was watching Bad Hair and I'm like, everything in this movie is blowing my expectations out of the water, and the music for sure.
So she makes Destiny's Child proud.
Yeah. Also, it's nice because I am not a fan of Freddy vs. Jason, but I want to see Kelly Rowland in more horror movies.
I always thought Kelly Rowland was great. I think she's an excellent vocalist. I thought her solo stuff was pretty good too. But yeah, I think the only thing horror-wise I've seen her in, would be Freddy vs. Jason.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, I think everyone should look up this song. It's in Bad Hair. It's called I Get It.
I'm looking it up tonight after this. All right. So mine was, the composer's name is Rob. I think he has a second name, but he goes as Rob. And he composed the score for Gretel and Hansel.
Oh, that was a great score.
The Osgood Perkins film, who, as you know, I'm a huge fan. We're both fans of his.
Both fans.
Yeah, he, so far everything I've seen of his I thought was great. And it has this sort of Wonderland fairy tale kind of feel to it, but just like the movie is, a demented take on that. So it has this kind of swelling score that I found to be really interesting, and I thought it was a little bit different than a lot of the other horror movie scores. I mean, most horror movie music now is all pretty great.
Mm.
And it's all pretty similar. It's all pretty great. So I thought that one was kind of interesting.
Okay, I don't want to go first again, but I kind of do, because for Best Supporting Actress, I have Alice Krieg, the witch, in Gretel and Hansel.
Guess what mine is.
Is it also Alice Krieg?
Yep.
Ah!
She's great. She's been a horror vet for decades and decades.
Yeah, and I'm always down to watch fairy tale adaptations, but I'm more about it like when they give it like a feminist tilt and they throw in the occult. And she's also like a really hip witch. She's chilling in an A-frame with the Sphinx cat. And
It's true. And she's incredibly creepy in every movie. Never creepier, in my opinion, than in this movie.
Oh, I gotta say, I laughed and felt grossed out. There's the scene where she's pulling the hair out of her mouth, and I'm like, whoa.
Oh, that was so good.
But she has this kind of devious grin on her face about it.
Oh, she's very self-aware of what's kind of going on. Yeah, that's a fun one. Yeah, she was great.
Yeah, it seems like she's having a great time. And I was thinking Gretel and Hansel would make a really good double feature with Sleepwalkers, where she's like the cat energy vampire.
Ooh, yep.
All right.
My runner-up, if I can mention my runner-up, would be Hilary Swank in The Hunt.
Oh, my God.
Because I had to have her. Yeah.
Yes. I was trying to squeeze in The Hunt somewhere, too, because it was definitely one of my favorite horror movies of 2020.
And I thought she just kind of, she had one of those roles. And again, it's a small role. You really don't see her until a certain point in the movie. But, man, she just chews that scenery so well and does it. It just has a blast with it.
Well, I think Hilary Swank is classically beautiful, but she also has such a unique face and features that I think, yeah, she was like really well cast in that. Kind of added to sort of the severity of everything.
Yes, yes. And a fun movie, and directed by Athens' own Craig Zobel. So, you know, I had to throw that in there.
Yeah, no, totally awesome. Very proud.
And he's a great dude, in addition to being, I think, a really good director. You know, Z for Zachariah and all that good stuff as well.
Yeah, I guess I've only seen The Hunt and Z for Zachariah.
Same. I know he has a couple others, but those are the main ones.
Right on. Who do you have for Best Supporting Actor?
This was a tough category for me. There were a lot of great actors and particularly great actresses in horror films, in which, you know, horror has always been, you know, you're going to find better performances from, typically, I find, female actors in horror movies. Overall.
I agree. There were like a million awesome actresses I could think of and not as many actors.
Right, it was a little bit harder. So for supporting actor, I found this category to be very tough. So I just went with it. Tommy Chong, Color Out of Space.
Oh my fucking God. Carrie, I just had this moment of ice freezing regret that I forgot Color Out of Space is a movie I watched in 2020.
He's just so far out and weird and fun. And actually, in a way, he sort of provides the plot kind of moves through him in a way. Everything gets everything starts out and is the thrust of the plot goes through him. I don't want to really say much about the movie because it's so strange and you just kind of need to see it. It's such a bizarre, visceral, just jumble of weirdness.
You know what's funny? I think among the few fans of horror films that is not a fan of Lovecraft literature, but I love adaptations.
Oh, yeah.
I thought Color Out of Space ruled. I think Tommy Chong, is he like a hippie squatter on their property?
Basically.
He's so great.
He's great.
Yeah, I was so happy to see him.
And he provided really some of the, he provides some lightness in what's a very strange, bizarre, heavy film. He provides that. So, yeah, that was great.
All right. Well, I'd like to change my answer for best supporting actor to be Tommy Chong as well. But my
second unanimous choice of the evening. Oh, my gosh.
But my original, like, the first one I thought of was Christopher Abbott in Possessor.
You know what's... Okay.
I just think the anguish he displays as a man fighting to gain back control of his possessed body, it's just so intense, and you can just feel, like, that struggle. I thought he demonstrated more emotion than any actor in that movie, and everyone gives a great performance.
Yes. I'll have more to say on that in a minute.
Okay.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I know it's not a 2020 movie, but I finally got to see Piercing in 2020, which is an adaptation of the Ryō Murakami book, the guy who also wrote Audition.
Mm-hmm.
And Christopher Abbott's in that, too, also playing, like, kind of a sleazeball partner. And I thought he was good in that, too. I'm like, damn, this guy who used to, like, annoy me on Girls is suddenly an awesome actor.
He's low-key really good. And I don't feel like he gets a lot of notice. I mean, he's getting roles, obviously. He's doing fine in his career. But, yeah, you don't hear him talked about.
Okay. I'm confused about where we should go next. Do you think best actor first?
Let's do best actor first.
Okay, you go.
Okay. And this is where... So this is a little bit weird. I actually put Christopher Abbott in Possessor in the actor category. Here's my reason for it. I felt in that movie there were two leads. I feel that... he would have been the second lead, but because his role is so large in the film and he's on screen so much, I put him down as an actor. And you know, there's an argument for both sides of what we chose. But I actually put him down as my favorite actor of the year because all the reasons you said, he is the emotional core of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that everything kind of moved through him. Now, that being said, there's excellent acting all around in the film. And Andrea Riseborough, of course, of Mandy fame, is excellent. She's great. Jennifer Jason Leigh is excellent in it. So you have some really, really solid...
They're like my two current dream women. I think they're so awesome.
Oh my gosh. They're both great in everything they do. So, but sandwiched in between these wonderful actresses is Abbott. And so I put him down as my favorite actor of the year. My runner-up, Kevin James.
Oh, shit!
And Becky.
Becky.
I thought Kevin James and Becky also, even though he is not, quote-unquote, the lead, I think his screen time is just enough that he works as the best actor. And again, had I chosen Abbott for supporting actor, immediately Kevin James would have moved into the top role. Because, again, you get to see Kevin James in a totally different type of role. I think Abbott, again, probably still has more... There's more oomph, there's more meat to his role. But Kevin James holds his own along with little Lulu Wilson as the title character as Becky. I thought he was great.
For me, the thing about Becky that worked was the cast.
It did.
They were both really good.
They were.
All right. Well, my best actor is Josh Rubin in Scare Me. He also wrote and directed it. And this was a movie where
I haven't seen that one.
Okay, well, the premise is it's two people stuck in a snowed-in cabin together. They're both horror writers.
Love that. All right.
And they're swapping scary stories. But when it started, the dialogue came off as so snarky and over-referential. I'm like, I don't know if this is, like, my particular poison, but I'm going to stick with it. And thank God I did, because there is a bizarro turning point in the middle where a pizza is delivered. And that's all I'm going to say about it. It goes into a place I wasn't expecting, and it becomes this all-out actor's showcase for, like, voices and characters.
Okay.
Aya Cash is the other lead, and she goes for it just as hard as Josh Rubin, but I had too many best actresses to pick from in 2020.
there were too many. Yeah.
Yeah, I would recommend Scare Me, but I would say, like, really give it some time and make sure you make it to the pizza delivery.
Okay, got it.
Because
you should always try to make it the pizza delivery. You do not want to miss the pizza.
Well, one of my best friends, Chris, tried to watch it, and he did not get there. And he's just like, this is annoying. And I'm just like, look, you've got to stick with it. And he never went back. So I'm just telling everyone now, you've got to stick with it.
Okay, got it. All right. So we're now at Best Actress, probably the toughest category of the evening.
I know. Every woman lead just slayed.
And it's okay to mention some runner-ups in this one. I think we should. I think there's no way our list can be complete without at least mentioning at least one other. So what was your who was your best actress in horror films this year?
It's Elizabeth Moss in The Invisible Man.
Oh, yeah.
Well, first I want to say Invisible Man was the last new movie I watched in our before times. Like, I saw it in the theater. I was comfortable and unmasked with a bunch of my friends. It felt great.
The pre-COVID days. There is some nostalgia for that as well, isn't there?
And I think this movie was a pleasant surprise because I saw it opening weekend with kind of the shadow of COVID on the horizon, but not yet. And the trailer didn't make it look that good. So I kind of went in thinking like it might be a dud. Mm-hmm. Totally blew me away. So much better than the trailer would lead you to believe. I think Lee Winnell is so good at those fast cut scares. There's a restaurant scene in Invisible Man that has like no buildup, and it startled me in this really delayed way. I screamed a couple seconds late because I was so confused and scared. But yeah, Elizabeth Moss gives such an incredible performance. Like when she is scared or when she is brave, just the expression she's able to make, I think are really incredible.
I thought she was fantastic. Who would be your runner-up?
Oh, I had so many, but just to name two, Betty Gilpin in The Hunt and Andrea Riseborough in Possessor. I think Andrea Riseborough is like a chameleon, and I think Betty Gilpin, I can't wait to see her do other stuff.
Yeah, no, she's great. So I actually switched mine up.
Just now?
No.
Okay, so who do you have for best actress?
Okay, so my best actress is a flip-flop of yours. I have Betty Gilpin in The Hunt as my top actress. And it's a little bit because Elizabeth Moss had two fantastic films this year. On my regular best of 2020, just films in general, I had Shirley is one of them.
I was fucking trying to figure out if I should count Shirley as a horror movie.
I don't think it is, but there are probably arguments you could say it is. I didn't think it was enough. I think it's more a relationship drama than anything. And also a descent into mental illness as well.
But it's also a fantastical revision of...
It is. I mean, I thought the film was fantastic. So Elizabeth Moss had both Invisible Man and Shirley this year, where she gave just brilliant performances in both movies. Mm-hmm. Betty Gilpin, I think the reason I picked it... No, she's not going to win an Oscar for The Hunt. But I'll tell you what.
She's going to win a horror Oscar.
I'll tell you, she is winning a horror Oscar today in old MBH land. I thought that she was such a welcome surprise, and I enjoyed The Hunt. You know, it's an update of The Most Dangerous Game. We all know that at this point. It's the movie that Trump was very angry with. So getting to see it was great. But her performance, I thought she was just hilarious, absolutely hilarious in the face of this extreme violence she's facing throughout the film, both witnessing and dishing it out. She has very few lines. She doesn't talk much, but her facial expressions and her mannerisms just cracked me up. I was just, the whole time I thought it was great. You could almost call this a tie with Elizabeth Moss in Invisible Man. She is the second. Because Elizabeth Moss is just a brilliant actress in everything she does all the time. And I could have flip-flopped either one. Elizabeth Moss maybe even deserves to be number one. But Betty Gilpin was the surprise. I already knew, I mean, Moss was just Moss the boss. You know,
Betty Gilpin makes so much sense to me. Like, every time that character is on screen in The Hunt, I don't know, I had such a good time watching her.
Yes. And my third, my third runner-up would very close, the other two, is Oksana Akinshina from Sputnik.
God damn it, I really need to watch Sputnik.
Which I really enjoyed. Now, Sputnik is also, it has some very dramatic elements. There's elements of family, elements of relationships in it, as well as a creature feature.
I thought it was like Russian Alien. Is that wrong?
Well, it is. But there's also a real heart to it. There's a real emotional core to the movie that you don't necessarily see coming. Very different from the original Alien. Russian production, made for, you know, very little money. But what they did with the budget of that film, I thought was fantastic. I thought the aliens, as I mentioned before, in my visual effects, it was a runner-up, were excellent. And I thought her performance was excellent as well. She is the heartbeat of the movie. She carries it through. So those were, again, a very, very tough decision on between those three.
Cool. Yeah, no, I think this is all to say that there were a lot of really incredible actress roles.
Like, my gosh. And I think, you know, I think part of that is, again, as we talked about, horror has always been a female-dominated genre as far as the screen time that actors, your female actors are getting opposed to your male actors. But you have more female writers in cinema now, in horror cinema. There's more female directors. So you're getting not just the voyeuristic take or role from females. You're getting females writing these roles for these female actresses, and I think that does make an impact in the genre, a strong impact overall.
Yeah, and I am here for it.
Sure, absolutely.
Who do you have for best director?
Director. I mean, it's Lee Whannell for Invisible Man for me.
You know, technically, I think he's probably the
technically,
best director.
Technically. Now, I know I've been cheating in every category. I just have to say, my follow-up is right there. I mean, it's 1A and 1B, right? Brandon Cronenberg for Possessor. Because I think Possessor is just fantastic as well. I think Lee Whannell made a terrifying film. And yeah, he had a budget. Not all these directors do. But I thought he did such a good job. He may have made the best Invisible Man version. The Invisible Man's been, the original one, I think, was 32 when it originally came out. So we've been seeing this story for 80 years. And
Howl Man.
90 years, yeah. And I think this may be the best version that's ever been made, so I got to give him a little credit for that.
Agree.
But also, Brandon Cronenberg, I almost said David Cronenberg, how can you not? Brandon Cronenberg made Possessor. It's a disturbing film, just like his father. He knows how to give you the gut punch of just gore and grotesqueness in his films. But he also shows, you know, you see the pain of the characters coming through. I thought he directed his actors very well. I thought those are both great directors. But Lee Whannell was my overall pick.
I think that's a great pick. My runner-up was also Brandon Cronenberg.
Ah, you're right, right. We're both fans. We've both been fans of his dad forever.
Yeah.
And well, he's carrying the mantle in his own way.
Have you watched Antiviral yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh, Carrie, you gotta.
I know.
Yeah, I think Brandon Cronenberg is just one of the coolest genre directors working today. Mm-hmm. But my pick for best director, and I'm going to mispronounce it, is Quentin Depew for Deerskin.
Oh, yeah.
So the only other movie of his I've seen is Rubber, the one about a killer tire named Robert.
Killer Tire, right, which I haven't seen any of his films.
Oh, shit. Yeah. You've got to watch Rubber.
Still haven't seen Rubber. I know.
So I feel like this guy makes movies that should not work, but somehow they do.
Which is a pretty incredible talent.
Yeah. So I loved everything that was going on in Deerskin. It's this very washed out brown and beige movie, but it's another absurd movie, and I'd say it's a lot more accessible than a movie like Rubber.
Mm.
So Jean Dujardin, he's the actor from The Artist. He plays this dude who's going through a separation. He purchases this very expensive deerskin fringe jacket, which he becomes obsessed with. He gives the jacket a voice and starts talking to it. It's kind of like the ultimate midlife crisis, but also a Summer of Sam situation. But instead of hallucinating a dog giving him orders to kill, this fringe jacket is telling him to kill people who have other jackets.
Okay.
I think Dujardin and Adele Hanel, the actress from Portrait of a Lady on Fire, are perfect together. And I watched this movie while I was recovering from surgery, and I like laughed so hard I physically hurt myself. Like, I thought it was so good. Oh my god. Have you watched Deerskin yet?
I still have not seen it.
Oh, Carrie!
I know.
It's on HBO.
Gotta see it. Ooh, okay. Alright.
Alright, we're down to the biggest category, Best Picture.
Bum, 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 bum. Best Picture of the year. So, yeah, this one is an interesting one. Why don't you go first for the final one?
Okay, I mean, this may be a surprise to no one, but so Invisible Man was the movie that I last saw in a theater like normal, but I drove to Atlanta and I watched Possessor at the Starlight Drive-In, and I was so psyched to be like at a new movie again. I can't even tell you, like, my heart was beating fast. I was so excited to see like a big screen.
I totally get it.
So it's Brandon Cronenberg's sophomore movie after Antiviral, which I also loved. And it's this slow, chilly body swap movie. I would summarize it. It's like a killer for hire who can take over the body of random people to get close to the hits.
Right. It's about as body horror as you get.
Yes. So I know we've all seen the same body swap movies. We've all seen the same body horror movies. And this is like the best of all those things curated into something totally original and awesome. And the cast is great. Like, we've already discussed like all of our best actors. And
would you describe it as sort of a cross between Freaky Friday and Big?
Yes. I did. You know, I gotta say, the first movie I thought of was Big. But there's a little bit of like Blade Runner in there when she's going through all the memory stuff.
There,
like,
there is. No, you know, it's as much sci-fi as horror, which I thought was nearby. I love when you can mesh those two genres in an interesting way. You definitely did that.
I just can't wait to see whatever he makes next. I'm just down to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, mine was probably, as you also put, probably a surprise to no one. I did put The Invisible Man as my top horror film of the year. I mean, it's just expertly done in every way. You know, it's Lee Whannell. And you know, he directed his first film was the either third or fourth Insidious. The fourth Insidious, I think, maybe. Either way. And then Upgrade, and now Invisible Man. So as a director, he's been writing for a long time, obviously.
He also did, what is that? Is it Dead Silence?
I think Juan directed it, and he wrote it. I believe. Okay. I believe it. I could be mistaken. But he's been working up to sort of, you know, what currently is his best film is The Invisible Man. And I thought it was just great. I mean, technically it's great. You've got the one of the best actresses, best actors in general, regardless of gender, in film today, and Elizabeth Moss working with you. You've got an excellent supporting actor in Aldous Hodge, almost made my list, probably would have been runner-up to Tommy Chong.
Oh, totally.
You've got just excellent acting all around. Again, just a director who had a really clear idea of what he wanted to do, and it shows in the finished product. I also, my runner-up would probably be, again, kind of weird, Sputnik.
Oh, man!
I really love this movie. And again, it's probably not as innovative as Possessor. It may not pack the technical and just overall, achievement of The Invisible Man, but I thought it was really great. And I can't remember the last time I saw a Russian horror film or Russian film in general. I know that obviously there are great Russian films being made. I have seen them, but I thought for an alien, I don't even want to call an alien clone. I think that actually is a disservice to the film. Very inspired by Alien, but it really is kind of its own thing too. And I thought it was just really interesting, and I was very impressed. That was sort of my surprise, I guess.
Sputnik has been on my to watch list for a while, and I'm absolutely gonna watch. It's the next movie I'm gonna watch.
It was recommended by a couple of friends who is not necessarily a straight up horror fan, but appreciates horror. Than one who's a big time horror fan, so I thought it was kind of interesting. I was like, okay, I kind of have to see this now. So yeah,
I was thinking too, I'm also not familiar with Russian horror of this millennia. Like, I think the last things I saw were like, I think Obioba might have been Russian, and that would be the 80s. Like, that's like a Behind the Iron Curtain type of,
right? I mean, I think of Tarkovsky.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, when you
Stalker.
Think of... Right, Stalker and all that. So, yeah, it is kind of interesting. But Solaris and all that. But, yeah. So, you know, I don't know if this was a better year than 2019 and 18. I feel like every year of horror we get new, wonderful stuff. But overall, still some great stuff this year.
There were a lot of great movies in 2020, and there were some other movies I didn't even get to touch upon. Hold on, I have like a little list.
Now, I will say this. I am, when Steph came over tonight to do the podcast, I was in the process of finishing up Dark and the Wicked. It's Brian Bertino, who directed The Strangers. It's his, gosh, I think his third or fourth film.
I've heard nothing but good things.
And I'm almost finished with it. And what I've seen so far, I couldn't quite put it on the list tonight. I didn't quite finish it in time. What I've seen so far, it would be a contender in a couple different categories for my horror Oscars of the year, because it's definitely creepy. Again, it does have a very Hereditary-ish vibe, which we talked about that with The Lodge this year, which was maybe too Hereditary-ish, as we discussed. But what I saw so far is incredibly creepy, really effective, And I'm probably going to be talking about that one the next time we have an episode.
I'll watch it ahead of next time too.
All right, so maybe we can discuss that together.
Well, one that I couldn't find a way to like cram into our horror Oscars, but that I really loved was Underwater.
Underwater's fun. It's a fun movie.
It's just so rare to get like a big budget creature feature that's not tied to a franchise. It's like its own thing.
And unfortunately, it's not going to improve the chances of that happening again because it did not make a whole lot of money. It's too bad.
Well, I was all about it.
I think the whole TJ Miller fiasco probably hurt it in the marketing. I think they purposely did not market as much as they could have.
I'm also like a champion of Kristen Stewart. I loved her. I love seeing her in those briefs. I think she's great.
No comment. but I think Underwater had, again, like you said, it was just fun to get one of those. We hearken back to the Leviathan Deep Star 6 days.
Yeah,
you know, we talked about the rush of underwater horror that happened from, 90 to 93, something, or 89, right around there.
Well, I love those, too. We still need to do an aquatic horror thing.
We've talked about doing that, I know. And actually, Steph and I did watch a bunch of aquatic horror in preparation for that episode, yet unaired.
Well, whenever that happens, I also watched Sea Fever last year, which I thought had some really cool effects and was an interesting premise. I believe it's Irish.
Yeah, I think so.
But it wasn't a favorite movie. Another movie I loved but couldn't cram in on my, like, award winner list was Vampires versus the Bronx.
Right.
I loved everything about that, too. And I also want to... The kid cast is so good. All of them are stars. None of them are annoying. And Method Man is ageless. I cannot believe he's 50.
That's true. that's totally, totally fair. Yeah, I mean, there were a few. So most of the movies, most of my top six or seven of my list of the year made it into some form or fashion of in the horror Oscars. I think almost all of them were represented in one category. The Wretched was the one that was a runner-up, and The Wretched was, I think, a really fun throwback 80s horror film. It just didn't quite hit, the top spots on my list. 1BR was the other one I really enjoyed.
Oh, okay. I also watched 1BR. I didn't love it.
It's a strange one. It's, you know, in its...
But it feels like a lesser Rosemary's Baby.
It's more of a sight... Well, I actually think it... sort of expands on that idea in a totally different way.
Or
The Invitation. But it's more of a mind control, psychological, cult type of horror film. And I thought it was kind of interesting where it went just because it didn't exactly go where I thought it was going to go. Mm. So that was another one that actually was on my top 10 of the year, but didn't make it to the horror Oscars.
I was never bored watching it. I watched it all the way through, and I was very engaged, and I was frightened several times, but I'm very easily frightened.
That's why I feel like I'm not, and that's why we love horror movies, but like I jumped at a couple movies this year. I've jumped at a few of those.
Oh, I'll jump at every cheap jump scare.
But the actress in that, Nicole Bryden Bloom, was really, really good.
She was great.
And she's been in a few things I've seen, but I think this is one of the few that she actually gets to play the lead in.
Right on. Well, this wraps up, I believe, our fifth horror Oscars.
Yes.
I have to go back to check, but I think we've done it every year.
It's pretty exciting, I know. We finally did it, Steph.
I'm so glad. And hopefully, we say this every time, but I truly hope we record more frequently, and I'd love to have guests on. I know one of our past guests, Klon, would be interested in doing something again, which would be great.
I think we should. Hey, you know, we're out of the first phase of COVID 2020. We're in 2021. You know, things are going to get better, and I think MBH is going to serve, you know, we'll continue. We'll continue moving forward with MBH. So,
yeah, it's good to know that we always have horror movies. And I think this year, so many movies were pushed from last year to this year. I think it's going to be a really, really, really good year for horror movies.
I'm going to be scrambling just to see films in general that I want to see of every genre. Because you're right, they've all been pushed back at least until the summer. I actually looked this past week at just movies in general. When you look between, say, you know, in particular July and August, September, towards the end of the year, it's absolute just nuttiness how many different movies are coming out. So we're going to be scrambling to watch everything we want to see.
I am so excited about being inside a movie theater again. As soon as that is a safe, an available option. Any other summer except for 2020, I would spend it watching literally anything that was playing at like the Beachwood $5 nights. And I'm just like, I miss it so much.
You know, it's sometimes the old adage is true. You don't know what you got till it's gone. I didn't realize, I mean, I've always enjoyed seeing movies in theaters. I didn't realize how much I would miss it not being able to.
Yeah.
You just don't think about that until it happens.
I know there are plenty of other important things. Hugging all of our loved ones again.
Well, yeah, the hugging is also really sad. Those are truly the most important things.
Well, here's the thing, Carrie. I think going to the movies is the most important thing.
That's fair. I mean, it's right up there. I mean, it's tied to the top three of my list. So, well, we really appreciate anyone out there who is, again, still listening to our My Bloody Horrorcast podcast. We appreciate it. And we will continue. We'll be here throughout 2021. We will have new episodes soon. That is a promise. It's a pinky swear.
Oh, I'm scared to make this promise, but I will also promise.
It's a pinky swear that in 2021, we will do another episode.
Okay.
I think that's fair, right?
Deal.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for listening.
Yeah, thanks. Bye.
Bye.